This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm superstar Frank Morano. Glad and great. I couldn't decide what word I was going to go for. Glad to be here or great to be here. So it came out great. Glad to be here. And this is Friday. Good Friday is no exception to our weekly appointment with the opportunity to get a few things off my chest. Namely, I want to tell you who deserves to be denounced.
The Other Side of Midnight presents Denunciation.
I must denounce the Department of Homeland Security, specifically whomever within the Department of Homeland Security decided it would be a good idea to come up with these government-made comic books to try to fight election disinformation. So with the 2024 elections looming, the Department of Homeland Security has a little noticed weapon in its war on disinformation. A wonderful article on this in The Intercept. The Intercept is a wonderful publication. It's very left wing, but they're doing some of the best work that anybody is doing in terms of journalism. The weapon that they've come up with in their disinformation war is comic books. Few have read them. But the series is attracting criticism from members of Congress, calling the comics creepy. Congressman Dan Bishop complained earlier this month that the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency produced series was just another way for the federal government to trample on the First Amendment in its zeal to fight so-called disinformation. Senator Rand Paul, quote, DC Comics won't be adding these taxpayer-funded comic books to their repertoire anytime soon. So these comics, and you should check them out if you can, they're ridiculous. These comics read like well-meaning but incredibly corny attempts to grapple with efforts by foreign governments to influence American public opinion, as articulated in intelligence community assessments. But there's a risk that the federal government's fight against foreign disinformation positions it as an arbiter of truth, which raises a lot of concerns on the left and on the right about civil liberties. The efficacy of the Department of Homeland Security's Resilience series of comic books is also far from obvious. Is anybody learning anything from these comic books? I suspect not. The members of Congress that are upset about this might be comforted to know that few people ever noticed the comics even existed. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency urged users to share their Resilience series comics, but a search of the webpage's address on Twitter shows that it is linked to fewer than a dozen times. So this agency, the CISA, also produced glossy-looking YouTube trailers for its two graphic novels that garnered just 4,000 and 6,000 views, respectively, a far cry from the hundreds of thousands of views trailers for other comics typically attract. So for CISA, disinformation is no laughing matter. The webpage detailing these comics, or the series of comics, says disinformation is an existential threat to the United States. This is really, I think, just honestly, a tremendous waste of time and money by the government. I think if a private agency wanted to do this, a private entity, a nonprofit, a government watchdog group, or some sort of a charity or anything, you know, a political group or anything, then I think that would be one thing. But for your taxpayer dollars to actually be going to funding this, I think is ridiculous. David Calhoun, I do denounce you. The CEO of Boeing is out amidst a leadership shakeup. See, they tried to just get rid of the guy who was in charge of the Boeing 737 MAX. And the more we learned about the 737 MAX, the more we learned that the problems with this 737 MAX were systemic to Boeing. Good riddance. Good riddance. Don't let the panel hit you on the way out. David Calhoun, I do denounce you. Did a terrible job at Boeing. And under his leadership, the company was atrocious. I want to denounce the Philadelphia police officer who took a picture of a man who died by suicide and shared it online. Marcus Boone killed himself. 39 years old. He jumped to his death from a highway overpass in northeast Philadelphia. And his mother has now filed a lawsuit in federal court alleging that in the immediate moments after Boone hit the ground, a police officer leaned over the railing and took a photo of his body lying on the pavement. The image later circulated the internet and ended up in the hands of a stranger who unknowingly showed it to the grieving mother. Brookins learned of the photo a few weeks after her son's death when she returned to the area desperate for more information about what happened in the 3 hours police spent with Boone trying to talk him off the ledge before he ended his life. She visited the gas station across from the overpass and asked an employee whether he had heard about the man who jumped a few weeks earlier. So, she has a whole conversation about this. And the guy says, "Oh, I got a picture of him laying in the road dead. Want to see it?" This is what the guy says to the guy's mother. He says, "One of my cop buddies took it." So she peppered him with all sorts of questions. Who sent the photo? What's his name? He said he couldn't remember. And then realizing she knew the victim, she said he warned her that cops around here don't like people talking. Now, maybe they're spicing this up a little bit for purposes of this lawsuit. But what's worse about this, and it doesn't appear that the facts are in dispute, the worst part about this is her son was still alive when that photograph was taken. And I really think this is atrocious. We have heard about certain police officers doing things like this before, taking photos at crime scenes. It's not a new phenomenon. The widow of Kobe Bryant settled a lawsuit with L.A. County for $28.5 million after first responders were found to have shared the grisly photos from the scene of that helicopter crash. But the frustration here with how the officers treated Mr. Brookins goes beyond the photo. His mother said the few conversations she's had with the police made her feel like a nuisance and that detectives didn't answer key questions like what her son told the police before his death, why no one called her or set out an inflatable device below the overpass in the 3 hours that he was contemplating jumping. So I think this is really terrible. So I don't have the name of the police officer that has posted this photo, took the photo and shared it online. But whoever that person is or persons, I do denounce you. I must also denounce whomever put this William Shatner ad in the New York Post yesterday. I don't know if you saw this, but there was an ad in the New York Post for this Antarctic cruise. It was, this is the cruise for Shatner and Scott Kelly, and it looks like a lot of fun. I would love to... I'd love to go on this, and I'm trying to cobble together the $25,000. But do you know what the text under William Shatner's picture says? It says, "Captain Kirk," and then it says, "Wilima Shatner," W-I-L-L-I-M-A. Now, look, I make typos all the time. But when you're asking for $35,000 for a cabin on this ship, is it too much to ask that you proofread the ads? If you're going to make a mistake like this in the newspaper ad, it doesn't give me a lot of confidence that you're going to take all the proper protocols necessary when it comes to things like safety or cleanliness or anything else. So, to whomever put that ad together and didn't proofread it properly, I do denounce you. I also want to denounce Paul Sutton. Paul Sutton. Here's a pro tip. When you're out there committing crimes, don't give any rooms in your house unique and easily identifiable crime-themed decor. Free piece of advice from me to you. And such as it was with Paul Sutton, where a Scarface-themed cinema room in his home, he's a drug dealer, by the way, really proved to be his undoing. This is a drug dealer who tried to buy submachine guns, and he was identified due to his Scarface-themed home cinema. He used something called EncroChat, which is an encrypted phone network that's used to traffic cocaine. He used it to traffic crack, cannabis, you know, a couple of years ago when cannabis was still illegal. And Mr. Sutton, who lives in Liverpool in the UK, was arrested by National Crime Agency officers, only 40 years old, and he's been jailed for 12 years and 6 months at the Liverpool Crown Court after admitting to drugs and firearms offenses. But this person, and it's all anonymous on there, use a fake name, Sutton, who uses the handle Nutty Rose, was unaware that detectives could read his messages after the EncroChat network was hacked by French police in 2020. And those messages showed that Nutty Rose had attempted to buy guns, including an Uzi and Tech-9 machine guns with a silencer. The NCAA said those deals, the NCAA said those deals eventually fell through due to the guns going out of stock. But he also discussed the purchase of at least a kilo of cocaine and bought and sold at least 11.5 kilos of cannabis. Information in chats with other criminals revealed Nutty Rose's birthday matched Sutton's, and he used his wife's name and birthday on his lock screen passcode. But he also told his contact about, quote, lads doing cinema room. When his house was raided in July of 2021, officers found a secret cinema room, just like he described, accessible from behind a mirror with cushions branded with the logo from the Al Pacino gangster film Scarface. And then, sure enough, you know, there's all sorts of drugs and everything else around there. So Paul Sutton, both for doing nefarious things and for being stupid about it, I do denounce you. I must also denounce all of the school districts that are closing early because of this eclipse on April 8th. I think this is the craziest thing in the world. Now the latest is Camden County, New Jersey. These schools have, you know, we've seen in recent years schools closing or having modified schedules because of extreme heat, because of the pandemic, because of even air pollution in some cases. Well, several Camden County school districts are now going to add the eclipse to their list of reasons to close. The Cherry Hill and Pansauken schools will close early on April 8th because of the total solar eclipse, which is predicted to become visible in the region mid-afternoon when students normally leave school. They say the solar eclipse is a safety concern for our students because directly viewing the sun during an eclipse without proper certified eye protection can cause serious eye damage. I think this is just awful. I think this is a wonderful opportunity for children to learn about astronomy and the moon, The sun and eclipses. I think this is just great. A great opportunity that is not going to come around for a very long time. If the school district can't afford to get them the eclipse glasses, they're giving them away for free in a lot of different places. I have a link on Facebook, by the way, to how you can get them for free in New York. But I'm sure there are a lot of places that are giving them away for free. If you don't want to buy them and you're afraid of getting sued or something, make the parents sign a permission slip. Otherwise, okay, then the children can stay home or something. I just think this is such a wasted opportunity. Such a wasted opportunity. So to all the school districts that are closing early because of the eclipse, I do denounce you. I must denounce Lawrence Fox. Lawrence Fox is described in Europe as a right-wing agitator, and he is not able to run for mayor because he messed up a form. Now, this guy is a former actor, best known for his role as the sidekick in the Morse spinoff Lewis, and he wants to run for mayor, and he should have every right to do so. But the body responsible for organizing the upcoming election said his nomination forms were submitted too close to the deadline to fix several errors within them. According to a screenshot tweeted by Mr. Fox yesterday, the deputy returning officer for Greater London told him he had fallen short on signatures from city residents. But apparently there was also an incident where he made a mundane paperwork error. So this is not actually what I thought it was. I thought he wrote in this area that he was not supposed to write in, that specifically said, don't write here. But I'm not seeing that in this story. So I'm actually withdrawing my denunciation of Mr. Fox. And instead, I am going to denounce this group that monitors and runs these elections. Basically, it's London's equivalent to the Board of Elections. I'm going to denounce this group, London Elects. There is no reason this guy should not be on the ballot. I mean, he ran for office 4 years ago, and he got 1.9% of the vote, and he lost his £10,000 deposit. So the guy was not likely to be a threat, but these are exactly the kind of people that should be able to run for office. So 12 people successfully managed to fill out their paperwork on time in order to run. And it looks like they really did kind of try to screw him here. So I don't like this at all. This is one of those stories where there was a misleading headline, and I am to blame for reiterating that to you before fully vetting this story. So that's my error. But London Elects, I do denounce you. Lastly, I want to denounce Chris Murphy, the senator from Connecticut, who complained on Friday about his scheduled CNN interview being bumped in favor of Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales, announcing she had been diagnosed with cancer. This is ridiculous. I mean, this is a sad thing that she had cancer. And for you to go on publicly and complain about this, I think that was really silly. He goes on Twitter and says, I was supposed to be on CNN at 2 p.m. to talk about the anniversary of the Affordable Care Act and the millions of lives it has saved, but my interview has been bumped by this much more important topic. And it was clear that by saying that, it was tongue firmly planted in cheek. Now, this guy got criticized for this like crazy. How can you do this? Have a little sympathy. And he did delete his tweet. But people lit him up, appropriately so. Imagine learning a woman has cancer and thinking this is such an inconvenience because my talking points got bumped. This is, and then another person writes, anyway, you can tell Chris Murphy definitely cares about people's health care because he admits his cable news spots are more important than cancer diagnosis announcements. I don't know how you think, even in a moment, that it's a good idea to run to social media to complain that you're bumped off TV because a woman who's a mom, a young woman who a lot of people like and respect, is announcing her cancer diagnosis. I mean, I really think that shows a complete lack of empathy and selfishness, honestly. Chris Murphy, I do denounce you. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment on anyone that I have denounced. Very excited about this because Sam Bankman-Fried was sentenced to 25 years in prison yesterday. Some people thought it was too much. Some people thought it was too little. And the Goldilockses of the criminal justice system thought it was just right. We have one of my favorite cryptocurrency experts in studio to break it down. Adam Wandt is an attorney, he's a professor, and he's a cyber expert. He has been following this case from the beginning. And I'll be honest, I at first didn't even really know when he was first charged with this who Sam Bankman-Fried was. And Adam Wandt has off air been kind enough to kind of guide me through every step of this case so that I can actually fake knowing what I'm talking about on this case. We don't have to fake it because we have a real expert coming up to break this down in a moment. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment on anything we've covered. Adam Wandt joins us next to talk Sam Bankman-Fried. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Greg Kelly. To my friends in the construction business, if you've been injured on the job, make just one call to the Construction Accident Lawyers at the law offices of Darren T. Moore. With hundreds of five-star reviews, they fight for more justice for every client and have secured millions of dollars in compensation for New York construction workers. Call 888-444-ATTY. That's 888-444-2889 for a free consultation. More diligence, more persistence, and more justice.
Prior results don't guarantee similar outcomes.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
After the hour, this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. This, of course, is Bruce Springsteen singing Hungry Heart, which, by the way, I must say that my sister does a killer karaoke rendition of this particular song. Saw her perform this for the first time 3 years ago tonight, and I'm glad I have it on video. Never forgot that performance. I think some ways she's actually better than Bruce. But anyway, this is a birthday bumper music selection from a publicist by the name of Annie Scranton, who's a good friend that I've known a long time, a great publicist. She's with Pace Public Relations. She's certainly gotten us a lot of great guests over the years, but she's a really interesting person who invited me on her podcast recently, and I got a great response from the podcast, and I hope Annie has a terrific birthday and that all of her wishes come true. And somebody whose wishes did not come true yesterday was Sam Bankman-Fried, because Sam Bankman-Fried will not be freed for at least a quarter century. Well, maybe a little less than that. Sam Bankman-Fried was the wunderkind. He was the go-to guy, and according to the prosecution and the jury that convicted him and the judge that sentenced him to 25 years in prison, he was largely running a massive fraud. Here's one of the victims, FTX investor Sunil Kavuri, who lost $2 million overnight.
I lost a huge amount of money when FTX collapsed.
And how much?
$2 million.
Yeah.
So, and that was for a family home and for my children's education, and that's overnight.
Here to help us break this down is our go-to expert when it comes to cyber, when it comes to cryptocurrency, practicing attorney, professor at John Jay College, Adam Scott Want. Adam, it is great to see you.
Frank, it's always great seeing you. Thank you.
So a lot of folks, I think, paid attention to this case like I did, which is they'd see the headlines. Okay, he's charged with something. Seems like he's guilty. Okay, he is guilty. Now he's being sentenced. Tell us what Sam Bankman-Fried did, both what he actually did as his job, what FTX was, and what his crimes were.
You know, Sam Bankman-Fried was a founder of a fairly important cryptocurrency, FTX, and a research company, Alameda Research, and a few other branches. And what he did was he started a company that was appeared to be a very legitimate crypto trading company. He sponsored events. He was dealing with sports, with stars.
I remember that Super Bowl ad with Larry David.
Absolutely. And for a lot of people, he was the face of cryptocurrency for quite some time. And in 2022, I think it was, when the market dropped and the value fell out of Bitcoin, it became obvious, just like it does with most Ponzi schemes, that the value wasn't there anymore and that there was a lot behind the curtain that needed to be unveiled. I think the most interesting part about it all, and I think what really where he dug his own grave, is he started this massive company that wound up defrauding people out of almost $10 billion. And, you know, I study fraud for a living. I study cybercrime. I study inspection and oversight. And I think what really did him in more than anything is the lack of controls and transparency he had at his corporation. You know, the average accounting systems, HR systems, all of the things we would expect a financial institution to have put into place to regulate, to make sure that there are no problems, none of that was ever done. And, you know, they would have meetings by text messages and send emojis with complex meanings. And ultimately, you know, he was arrested and he was charged and convicted on 7 counts of fraud and conspiracy. And a lot of that had to do with how he ran his company and the fact that he misdirected funds, again, about $10 billion worth, that were supposed to be safe. You know, you go and you buy cryptocurrency at a competitor. You expect that cryptocurrency to be there even if the value of the cryptocurrency changed. But he raided accounts, he looted accounts, and he used that money for a variety of things, including his own wealth and research, bribing of Chinese government officials, political donations here in the U.S., and he lived, you know, quite the lavish lifestyle.
So, but when we talk about the actual crime, right, the crime is people would invest with this company, FTX, and he would do what with the money? He would put it in his pocket, and he would spend it on himself instead of on the investments that they were supposed to be making?
He'd very often transfer money to his research company and then be able to spend it in very different ways that were even less transparent. You know, take the value out of the cryptocurrency transactions that should be secured and make a business decision to divert it to political opponents or Super Bowl ads or other things. You know, he clearly.
So this is clearly, in your view, not a question of poor management of a company. This is a question of criminally running a company.
When we first heard about this, it was quite obvious that there was reckless disregard, gross negligence, if not more, you know, wanton behavior of reckless disregard for all standards and controls. And then as we dug deeper and see where the money went, it's quite clearly it was criminal. Mm-hmm. He took money that should have been secured for people, and he used it for his own reasons.
And he knew that it was clear that this was intent. This was not ignorance. This was not an honest mistake. He did the wrong thing intentionally.
I have no doubt, and I think that the court found very clearly that not only did he do the wrong thing intentionally, but worse than that, he lied about it. He mm-hmm. perjured himself. He got on the stand. He tried to testify. You know, he tried to make it seem like this was just an error, a judgment, or he was young and naive. And it really upsets me when people see this guy as young. He's not young. You know, he's 32 years old, I think, at this
point. Well, it's young to be a billionaire, right? I mean, a lot of folks say, look at the influence that he had with political figures, running Super Bowl ads, doing things like that. And he looks young to have that amount of wealth and power.
Certainly looks young. But, you know, if you committed some serious felonies at 32, would you be expecting to be held accountable for them?
Yeah,
or would you just say, hey, I'm young. I this is just a mistake.
That's fair. Hey, so when we talk about, and people tuning in, we're talking with Adam Wandt. You've probably seen him on television before. He's one of the most widely quoted cyber experts out there. He's also a professor at John Jay College. When we talk about the investors that were defrauded here, who were the customers of FTX? Was the Joe Q Public that has a Robinhood account and that might have $100 or $1,000 to invest his customers? Or was it really high net worth individuals putting, in the case of that fellow that I played out the audio of, $2 million into these accounts?
The sad part is it's all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
It was your mother, your fathers, your uncles who sometimes took out loans on credit cards or borrowed money to buy crypto thinking that they were going to make a fortune. It was technical people. Thankfully, not me. I never bought with FTX and I'm very lucky that I didn't. But, you know, I owned a good deal of crypto, but, you know, I keep it safeguarded.
Why'd you stay away from FTX? Was there something that you saw there, either in him or the company itself,
no.
that said to you to keep away?
Not at all.
No, just
no.
It happened to be?
Yeah, it's complete circumstance, you know, happenstance. It's I saw no flags with FTX because I didn't pay too much attention to it before this happened. You know, my interest is more in the cybercrime elements of crypto and how that works and how crypto should be regulated. You know, I do a lot of work as an attorney with the New York City Bar, and I'm really interested in how we could get cryptocurrency regulated better, because then problems like this would be non-existent.
The you alluded to how this all came crashing down for him and how part of it was the decline in the price of cryptocurrency. And I know Bitcoin has been very volatile. It's been up and down like a roller coaster. How exactly was this scheme exposed?
When people try to get money and there's no money there, and then people start talking in the background, and your staff gets worried, and people are trying to make withdrawals, and they're not able to access their accounts, that's how this gets exposed. When you look at the history of this, there was no doubt internal dialogue between people at the company that were very worried that this was about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And those dialogues made it outside the company. So there were people outside of the company that were already talking. And then there was a giant crash, and then people's money was unavailable. And at that point, you know that there's a significant issue.
Why is this case, the case of Sam Bankman-Fried, why is this such a big deal?
This is one of the largest investment frauds in U.S. history. It's not the largest, but it's definitely one of them. It's the largest that involves cryptocurrency. It affected a significant amount of people around the world. And it not only affected the customers that bought cryptocurrency, it not only affected the investors and the lenders to the company, but it affected people like me who purchased cryptocurrency as investments, mm-hmm. keep that on the outside, and now there's this huge stain on cryptocurrency.
The sentence is 25 years in prison. Now, apparently he defrauded people of $11 billion. Is that the number?
I would say between 10 and 11, yeah.
And is part of his sentence that he's going to have to make restitution for the billions that he stole?
You know, they're able to recover some of the money, but that wasn't his money to begin with, as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, being able to claw back or secure finances that he had, to me, is not restitution, because if he's running a fraudulent company in the first place and stealing people's money for salary— they're just taking back what they should. Uh-huh. He should not have gotten in the first
so
place.
So when he comes out of prison, let's say, you know, is he then going to owe the federal government or his victims billions of dollars?
There's a judgment against him. I'm not sure how that's going to work out yet.
Gotcha.
I need to, you know, part of the problem is this happening today. You know, there's no like live word for word coverage, and we're still looking at documents
sure.
as they come out. What is clear is something that Sam Bankman-Fried said himself. the useful part of his life is now over.
Mm-hmm. So 25 years in prison. Give me your take on the appropriateness of that sentence. Too much, too little. The prosecution, I believe, was looking for 50 years. The defense was looking for probation. Where do you think this falls?
I'm in the Goldilocks zone. You know, what you, I heard your introduction mm-hmm. as I walked in here. I think this is just right. I think that what he did was one of the most serious financial crimes ever committed. I think it was premeditated. I think it's clear that he knew what he was doing. I think that $10 billion came out of the American public's pocket. So probation, a few years in jail, it doesn't make a statement to dissuade people from doing this again. It doesn't show the significance of what he actually did. I don't know if there's a difference between 50 and 25 years other than he'll probably make it out of prison at about 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see what he makes of his life at that point. A lot of people who go to prison for financial crimes come out of prison and wind up making a significant amount of money consulting for anti-fraud.
I know Jordan Belfort, the Wolf of Wall Street, has made a pretty good living out of prison. Thinking of Frank Abagnale, yeah. the guy that was Catch Me If You Can was based on. So some people do very well. One of the people that never made it out of prison, obviously, was Bernie Madoff. That crime was very clear to people in terms of what he did and the people that he hurt. The New York Mets are still reeling from their association with Bernie Madoff. Compare what Sam Bankman-Fried did to what Bernie Madoff did in the scale of, I don't know, evilness.
This is simple. To me, they were both equally as evil. Equally evil.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie Madoff did hold all that charitable money, right? And that's a huge issue. But with FTX, you had charities buying crypto for investment. So I think that what they did was equally evil. But there is a distinction. And the distinction is critical. Bernie Madoff pled guilty.
Mm.
He didn't get full of himself and try to say this was all just a misunderstanding. He collapsed. He pled guilty. He got a sentence. Here in this case, Sam Bankman-Fried fought. He tried to put on this face of no remorse, and the judge in the sentencing, you know, I've been able to get a good deal of what the judge said, and the judge was clear that the perjury and the lack of remorse, you know, even at his sentencing, he was blaming other people. So he was taking some accountability, and he was saying that he failed people. But, you know, did he go up in front of the judge and say, yeah, I stole all this money and I made a huge mistake and I'm sorry and I want to live a better life? No.
So let me ask you a question. If what he did is on the same plane as what Bernie Madoff did, Bernie Madoff at 71 years old, even though he pled guilty, was sentenced to 150 years in prison. Here you have Sam Bankman-Fried taking the case to trial, testifying, and I think you make a pretty compelling case, perjuring himself and showing no remorse. So how can 25 years be appropriate if you're saying he did the same thing as a guy that got 150 years?
Federal sentencing guidelines are always confusing. They always change. They look at a bunch of different factors, including whether you testify. And, you know, I think a judge looking at the available options here, you know, the prosecution was only asking for 40 to 50 years. They weren't asking for 150 plus years. There were seven charges in this case. There were different amounts in the Bernie Madoff case. You know, I think the judge struck a good medium where he said, look, we're going to really significantly punish you for what you did, but you're going to get out one day and be mm-hmm. able to see what you do. You know, Bernie Madoff in his 70s, you know, even if he got 20 years,
right.
he would have died in jail no matter
right.
what. So I think both make a statement, but they both make a very different statement.
If people just tuning in, we're talking with Adam Wandt about this Sam Bankman-Fried sentence, getting 25 years in prison. Could be significantly less with good behavior and some other rehabilitation programs while he's incarcerated. I was reading an article right before you came on about John Ray, the person who was appointed to run FTX after they filed for bankruptcy 2 years ago. And they say that John Ray has been digging through what Sam Bankman-Fried left behind and he's fielded a lot of criticism over his process, but he's also found a surprising amount of value. And they say, Semaphore said that this put him in sort of a unique position because they say his success in finding value, it diminishes to a certain degree the consequences of Sam Bankman-Fried's crimes. I'm curious, where do you go from here if you're FTX or one of the FTX investors? What comes next for the company, for the investors in the company, for the people hoping to get a little bit of their money back?
I hate to say this, but what's happened to all the other major companies that have gone through something like this? They usually don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. Whether they could be bought out by a more reputable company that could help regulate it and get it back on board, to me, that would be a great solution, right? You don't want to lose the structure. You don't want to lose the value. But again, you can't trust the name and it's been through too much. So a buyout of some sort would be great. But ultimately, like I would never trust the name FTX mm-hmm. again.
One of the things that we heard a great deal about was the role of Sam Bankman-Fried's parents. Unlike a lot of other people that wind up convicted felons, he did not come from an impoverished background, did not come from a struggle or anything like that. Seems like he led a pretty privileged existence, and his parents are very serious people, intellectuals. And I've heard some people say that his parents bear a bit of culpability here. What's your view?
This is a really hard topic. I followed this along pretty well, and there were definitely statements made by his father during some, I don't want to call it, rally is the wrong word, but during some events that definitely pushed, in my opinion, the limits of what should and should not have been said. It's definitely obvious to me, you know, from the documents that I read, at least in my opinion, that they enabled him in some ways. They championed him, maybe. You know, I think when you, they're brilliant people, you know, both of his parents, far out accomplish me. But it seems like they set up this environment where they championed him to be irresponsible. They definitely,
to be irresponsible.
They definitely aided in the growing of the company. And like I said, his father at an event definitely said some things that could be problematic. And you know, whether or not he was investigated and cleared or not cleared, I don't remember, but you know, there was definitely that there.
So do you think they have some culpability, it sounds like, potentially?
I you know,
maybe on a moral level.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. There's no doubt in my mind that, in my opinion, I see moral culpability. There's no doubt in my mind, in my opinion, that the father pushed the limits of what he boundaries of the law and maybe put himself at risk.
We've seen a lot of cases over the years where people are wealthy, well-connected, and they seem to be able to get away with it, even though the structures of whatever they were doing that was inappropriate should have been obvious to everybody, but they were able to buy a great deal of influence. Sam Bankman-Fried made a ton of political contributions, primarily to Democrats, but not exclusively, primarily to Americans, but not exclusively. In your view, and you're looking at this case, did his prolific use of political donations help him evade prosecution, at least for a time?
The way prosecutors work, and with prosecutorial discretion and their ability to investigate, I would not say that. I think that any good prosecutor, before bringing any case, is going to look at all factors, including the resources and background of the defendant. And if you're going to be bringing charges against a potential billionaire with parents who are Stanford law professor parents, you're going to want to make sure all your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed mm-hmm. before you move forward. And, you know, I see the same thing in other areas in law enforcement where when it's an important big case, the public very often says, hey, you're moving too slow. But from a prosecutorial point of view, you don't want to blow things.
There's no way, or is there, that they can get some of the money that he made to politicians back? Can they claw back those contributions?
That has been a conversation that I've had with attorneys that I work with and consult with over and over and over again. Let me say this. If you're a politician that has received some of this money, The first instinct a lot of politicians had were to donate this money to charity. Mm-hmm. It should have gone into a federal fund to go back to victims. And do I see money being clawed back from politicians? No. But do I see that should have happened or should happen in a way where that money goes back towards restitution? Yes.
There are a lot of people listening who are very leery of cryptocurrency that have traditionally invested in traditional assets, things like real estate, stocks, bonds, things of that nature. And a lot of them said, look, everybody knows cryptocurrency is the wild, wild west. It should have been buyer beware. These investors thought they were going to make a lot of money in a hurry. And hey, them's the breaks. Is there any element of this is gambling and that's what you get?
Yeah, there's definitely, but it's deeper than that. There's the element of this is gambling and that's what you get. But then there's also this is the United States of America. We have rule of law and people that are running corporations should do it legally and fairly. And if it's a financial corporation that deals with other people's money, the this is that what you get doesn't really work with me anymore.
Tell me in a word, it's been since this verdict, cryptocurrency led by Bitcoin has gone up significantly since he was found guilty. Right now, as we stand here now, is cryptocurrency a good investment?
I don't know.
Fair enough. Adam Wandt, practicing attorney, professor at John Jay College, cyber expert. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me on the show.
We'll do it again soon. You want to comment on any portion of our conversation, please do so at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Straight ahead.
Other Side of Midnight. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Couple of minutes before the top of the hour, this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. This is Johnny Kemp, just got paid. I don't think I've heard this song. I'm not familiar with it. Was this one of your picks, Tony?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, so tell us about this. What made you pick this?
Well, this song came out every Friday night in 1988. This was my theme song, Just Got Paid, Friday Night.
Very nice. Okay. I like it. All right. Hopefully you're doing something fun if you're celebrating Easter this weekend. I hope you enjoy it. You know, I'm working on putting together this ping pong tournament for April 13th. And last year, you know, you're always fighting the last war, right? So last year at the tournament, my friend Kyle O'Brien, because, you know, the one complaint about the tournament was that it was too long. You know, it's double elimination. There were 30 players. It goes on. It went on all day. So some people said, you know, there were people there for 5-6 hours in some cases. You know, if you played really well and you survived till the end, you're there a while. So that was one of the leading complaints. So I said I would try and get a second table. So my friend Kyle, I remember this clear as day. Last year, tells me, I have a table and you can borrow it for the day. Great. Great. So I text him yesterday. Hey, Kyle. You know, you're playing on the 13th, right? Yeah. Did you mention that you had a table that we could use for this tournament? Nope. So now I'm scrambling to try and get another table. And I start looking up places to try and rent a table. I'm not having any luck necessarily. So I am hoping not to have the conversation with my wife where I say, you know, honey, We have 40 players instead of 30 players this year, and we only have one table. So I'm trying to find another table. So if anybody knows of another regulation-sized ping pong table that I can rent somewhere, let me know. I reached out to one company that services our area, and they say I got a very confusing email back, which was something like, well, we have a $2,500 minimum, and the kind of thing you're asking for would only be $450. Well, excuse me. Sorry. They're almost acting like I insulted them. It's like, you know, I felt like I owed this guy an apology the way Kristen Welker's bosses owed her an apology for asking her to interview Ronna Romney McDaniel. Sheesh. All right. Those of you that are on hold, I will get to you after the top of the hour. If you live in a market where the next hour of the program is not being heard, you can listen to the whole, you can listen to the live stream online. Just go to my Facebook page. We have the link on there. Or you can just catch up on the podcast whenever you can. Just search The Other Side of Midnight on any podcast app. But I'd appreciate it if you told your local station, hey, we'd like all 4 hours of this program. We're going to miss something exciting. All right. Quite a bit to get to, and we will get to it all in the words of the late, great Bob Grant. Your influence counts, so be sure to use it.